Today on Coding 1, you're going to learn all about variables, while loops, and we're going to convert integers to binary.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. Learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,000 high-quality online courses and training videos, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/C101. That's lynda.com/C101. Welcome to Coding 101. It's the TWiT show that gives you the knowledge to live in the wonderful world of the programmer. I'm Father Robert Ballasaire.
And I am Shannon Morris. And for the next 30 minutes, we are going to get you learned up on everything having to do with the code monkeys.
That's right, Shannon. Now, we know that the key to becoming an expert is repetition. Now,
yes.
So is there anything that you think our code monkeys need to know to move up a level?
Quite a bit, actually. So we did get a whole bunch of feedback from last week's show about, well, basically, how do we get started? You know, we really want to enjoy this stuff, but I really need to know how to download the program and everything else that has to do with getting started in C#. So today, I wanted to go ahead and start the show by giving you a little bit of background about how to actually get started downloading and then copying and pasting the code from GitHub.
I love it. How about this? Let's get to it.
Okay.
All right.
So I went ahead and pulled up everything on my computer, if you look over here. So I'm going to show you the website. So this is where you can download Visual Studio Express for the Windows desktop. That's the specific one that we're going to use. It's totally free. There's no, like, 60-day thing or anything
right.
So you just download it right here. You can sign in. If you do sign in on here with your Windows password and username, then it'll actually sync everything customized that you have customized in the program from one computer to another.
Right,
so
right.
Every time you open up Visual Studio on any computer, it'll all be the same.
Now, I also know that Visual Studio Express is free for everyone, but if you're a student, so if you could show a student ID, you can actually get the professional edition for free. It's totally gratis. So yeah, if you're in a high school, if you're a university, go ahead and choose the Visual Studio Professional for students. It'll ask you a little questionnaire and ask for, I think they want a scan of like your ID, but then you're good.
I wonder if I still have mine from like university.
I was thinking about that.
I still look about the same.
I'm kind of a student of life.
Yeah,
right?
I'm a student of life. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So once you have this downloaded, it's a very easy process to get everything downloaded. You just go through the online steps, and then this is what the program looks like when you first open it. So I just opened this from my start menu. It's right over here. So I clicked on that. And that's what it looks like. Now, we are talking about copying the code from our first episode, episode 1, from GitHub. So to do that...
Yeah. I'm sorry about that, folks. I know that there was much frustration, very angry, wow, from people who were saying, oh my God, I copy and pasted the code. Yeah, that was my fault. I didn't realize that our Drupal backend on the TWiT website wasn't going to play nice.
Not the best place to put actual code.
Right. So because of some very brilliant people that we've got in the chat room, in my Twitter account and in Google+,
yes. We
moved everything over to GitHub. That's where we're going to be putting every project from here on in. You'll be able to find each and every single episode, the homework, the code, the whole deal. And the nice thing is, if you go ahead and click that, It will show you all the code in the right format.
Well, I thought format. I was clicking there.
Yeah. Oh, well, it doesn't want to play with you right now.
Huh.
All right. So now that they've got a place where they can get the code, like, really, really slowly.
There we go.
What are they going to do with it, Shannon? You were saying that people were having issues?
Yes. So we want to make sure that we're opening the correct type of project. So we're going to go up here to New Project. And this is C#, so we're choosing Visual C#. And this is a console application. So a console application, see how it looks kind of like a terminal or a command prompt? That's basically what it looks like whenever you're using our binary project from last week, whenever it actually runs. So obviously, we're going to choose console application. So you choose that and you click OK. And then it'll open for you. It has a little bit of information up here, and
then this
is where the actual code starts.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take the code from GitHub, and I'm going to start with class program. I'm You're going to copy and paste all this information and then bring it back over here. I'm going to just cut that out and repaste the new code right into my line. So now I have the pretty much the same exact information that we got from the code last week. Now, if I hit start, it should run just fine. Okay,
there we go.
So now I can run the code from last week, and I get my decibel number is 19. Hit enter to exit. Yay, it worked.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And now, the nice thing about this, remember, Snubs and I are both tinkerers. We like to hack around. And that's why we're giving you, there were a lot of people, I think, who were saying, how come you're not just giving us like a Hello World program? Well,
that's
the reason
true.
Why we're not doing that is because we only get half an hour with you every week. And we got to move a little bit quicker. So what we're doing is we're teaching you the basic elements, but we're also giving you a lot more so that if you feel so inclined, you can poke around. And remember, since that code is always on GitHub, tear it apart, break it, change lines, try to put different functions in there, because there's nothing you can do that cannot be undone by simply copying and pasting.
Now, say I want to write my own console command.
Yeah, let's do
that.
And
I'm just going to write it on top of what we had last week with the enter your own binary number, and then it converts it for you. So this week, I just wanted to put in a simple hello world and then just kind of mess around with it a little bit, you know, kind of break it a bit.
Yeah.
Because people do want to see hello world, right? Right.
Yeah.
So this is what I did. If we go back to my computer, I have highlighted all the code that has to do with writing input and then reading output. So I just erased all that, and then I'm going to put in my own thing. So I'm going to delete that comment
delete
too,
because
nobody needs that comment there.
We don't like you.
Make
no one likes
you lines.
Comment.
Okay, so the first line that I'm going to write is console. Oops, console. And if you press enter, it's just going to automatically fill in whatever you have highlighted.
Your options, right.
Yeah. Console, write. And then type in whatever I want it to say. Hello, world. Okay. And then at the end, of course, you have to add a semicolon, because that's what you do with every single line in this.
Let me point out one thing. And the reason why we wanted to start you with Visual C Sharp, and I know there's a lot of people who are like, well, why don't you start with an easier language?
That's true.
Because this IDE is free, we wanted you to get used to using high-end tools. The nice thing about this environment is it will actually tell you the different options, like that autocomplete.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. It will say, okay, if you started writing console, here are the different things that you could put behind console. And it will tell you when you make a mistake. You'll get little colorings.
Nice. Oh, it's great. Yeah. Let me show you an example for an error if you wanted to make an error. So say I forgot to put a semicolon at the end, and I hit start. It's going to tell me there's a build error. So I'm going to say, no, I don't want to go ahead and run it from the last successful build. It gives me a little red squiggly line.
It's like, oh, it expects, oh, there
it
is.
So it says semicolon is expected. So if I put that semicolon and then I run it, so now it says, hello world, hit enter to exit, because I left in the hit enter to exit down here. Now, if I want to put in a second line, this one's going to be a little bit different. So this one's going to be console, and I'll press enter again, write. And I'm going to add line on here, because that's going to tell it, after you're done writing hello world, it's going to put in an automatic enter to the next line below it. So this time I'm going to write space, what's up, world?
It's sort of an update to the hello world
And then
program.
Put a semicolon. So if I run this, it says hello world, space, what's up, world?
And then
the enter.
Down. Right.
And then it says hint enter to exit.
And that's the difference between the write and the write line command.
Write line, exactly.
Just lets it write, and then basically the cursor stays right there.
Yeah.
Write line says write this, and then go ahead and drop down.
Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah.
I got so excited when I was able to make this work. I know it's super simple, but I was like, yes, I did it all by myself. I'm so excited.
That's what we want. We want you to have that feeling. We want you to have that tinkering feeling where you're like, I wonder if this will... It totally works.
It totally
yes!
works. Yeah, I'm sitting
Folks,
over here
this,
during
this
know-how, and I'm just like, yes, it worked. Yes. Okay, so the next part gets a little bit more complicated, but it's still along this line of beginner speech. So this one, I'm going to make a string that's called my variable string, and you can call it whatever you want. So if we look at my computer when I do this, I'm going to start with string, and string is this is where we're going to get into variables
get
in our
variables,
second segment
right?
for this episode. So string, and then the next line is going to call, I'm going to call it boondocks. Because I can.
because
nobody said
Because
I
you can't stop me.
Equals, and then I'm going to put console again, read line. So I'm going to just press enter right there. Read line, and then empty parentheses and a semicolon.
Right.
And what does this mean?
Yeah, so what this is doing is it's initializing a variable called boondocks, which is a string variable. So it's going to hold a string of characters.
Exactly.
Then it's going to do the console read line command. The console read line command waits for the user to enter something and hit enter. And then when they do that, it's going to take whatever they entered in that line and put it into the variable called boondocks.
Yay! So now on my next line, I'm going to type in console period write line and then put in boondocks.
There you go. And what it should do now is it should just output to screen whatever it was that you put in that previous line.
Okay, so it says hello world space what's up world because I just left that in here.
That's waiting.
And then if I just type in yo dog got some boondocks.
Boondoge.
So it's going to repeat what I said because that is my string variable called boondocks. Mm-hmm. So it repeats boondocks and then it spaces down and says hit enter to exit because I just left that in there. So I hit enter and it exits for me.
Now,
so cool!
It's so cool. Now, folks, I know that it's a little bit daunting. There's people who are freaking out because of all that extra code that we say, oh, just don't worry about it. No, seriously, we mean don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just leave it alone.
Get
we'll get there. Well, eventually we're going to show you what that does. But for now, just assume it has to be there and tinker around with the parts that we want you to tinker with. Last week,
Yay!
We asked you to play with the console command, with the read
Break
and
it.
The write commands. Yeah, do
There's
that.
An undo button. It's,
it's an
good.
Undo. Right, exactly. And then we're going to move on to more advanced topics. What do you think? Should we do
I
that?
Think we should. So I mentioned string variables in here.
Yeah.
So why don't we get into variables?
Let's do that. That's actually a really, really good point. Now, snubs, you remember high school math, right?
Unfortunately. That's why I skipped school.
Do you remember like X and Y and A and B? And
yes.
Those were called variables, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember what they did?
Yeah, well, they just stood for a number.
Right. It's like a placeholder, right?
Yeah.
It's a way to say a value is going to go into this placeholder, be it X, Y, A, B, C, whatever it was going to be. We knew that that's how you did mathematical proofs.
Yes.
You had something that could represent any value that I put into it. The same way goes for variables in computers.
Ah.
When I play with a variable in a programming language, what I'm telling my compiler is, hey, here's a space, a piece of memory that I want you to reserve. I'm going to fill it with a value. I might do it now, I might do it later, but please hold on to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Now, when we talk about variables, there are many different types of variables. I can have an integer variable, which under
an
most programming...
An integer is just a number?
A whole number, right.
Okay.
1, 2, 5, 1,000. Those are all... I could have a decimal number, which would be like 1.
That could be like 3.14
exactly.
Or 2.5 or something.
Exactly. So pi variable, whatever it's going to be.
Okay.
I can also have a string of characters, which
and
is
that
what
could
you
be like
with.
My boondocks thing.
Exactly, which means it's just going to store a piece of memory that has of all the characters. Characters, it could be letters, numbers, alphanumeric that you've put out. There are several different types. I mean, you could have floats, you could have integers, you could have long integers. But the thing to remember about all variables is that as big or small as the name might be, they never get more complicated than your high school math class.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they really don't.
Because I kind of did really bad in college.
Oh, no. You know what? We're going to fix that.
Okay, good.
We can fix that. We're
going
to fix that. Now, one thing I will say about variables, and we'll get into this more later on, is when we initialize a variable, what we are doing is we're taking out a chunk of system memory and saying, that's what this variable is going to take up.
It's,
it differs based on what kind of variable it might be. For example...
So is this why we kind of talked about binaries last week?
This is why we kind of talked about binary, right?
Ah.
Exactly. Because remember, all memory is binary, right?
Mm-hmm.
The memory in your computer can only be on or off, each an individual cell.
Right.
So that tells you how many possible combinations you can have for any given variable. So, for example, an integer is a 32-bit variable.
32 bits, okay.
So 2 to the power of 32, which gives you something like 4,300-something digits.
A lot.
That's a lot. It gives you a lot of possible combinations. But those 32 bits of memory have been reserved for that integer value.
Okay,
right.
For that one value.
Exactly. And actually, just an aside... This is one of the reasons why you always want to sterilize your command input. Because if you don't do a really good job...
What do you mean by sterilizing?
Making sure that, like when you do the read command, the console read, if you don't check the input to make sure that it was what was expected. So, for example, if you put enter number between 1 and 5, and someone writes in execute,
62.
Execute, 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 if you don't make sure that your code makes checks to see if they're giving you the expected value...
Yeah.
they could do really bad things. They could actually overwrite some of those variables and possibly...
Oh, I've heard about hacks like this.
Buffer overrun.
That's fun.
But okay, so that's a variable. We're gonna show people how to initialize variables. We're going to show them how they work more. But as long as they know that that's what a variable does and that they know that what you did in your code was to initialize a variable, we're fine.
Okay,
I think we should probably talk a little bit about loops.
Ooh, loops. What are those?
Yeah. Okay. We're specifically talking about a while loop. Now, when we talk about loops... What we're talking about is a command, something that allows you to repeat a piece of code over and over. Now, let me okay. for example, let me write this. What if I were to put console write, that's an R, actually, hello world.
So then it'll just output hello world.
Right, exactly right. So if I print this, it's going to write hello world, correct?
Yeah.
Now, what if I wanted to write hello world 10 times? What was the first thing I could do?
You could just console write, copy and paste,
exactly.
console write over and over
I
again.
I could just do this 10 times.
That would
times,
make sense.
Right? I could just say hello, console write hello world, console write.
But that
hello
would be a pain
world.
In the butt. Like,
be
if you're an actual coder, you're doing this for your day job. Nobody wants to do that.
Yeah. And imagine if the function was more complicated than just saying hello world. Let's say the function computed the interest off of a bank account. I don't want to have to hard code it every single time the program does that.
Right.
I want to have a way to reuse the code that I've used.
Okay, this is why we have loops.
This is why we have loops.
All right.
So let's say I have something like this. I encapsulate this, and let's pretend I have a function that allows me to repeat this as many times as I want.
Do it.
That
I
would be
see
a
it.
Loop. That's yeah. So let's do this. I'm going to show you what's called a while loop. A while loop allows me to continue doing a piece of code, to reiterate it over and over as long as a Boolean condition is met. Now,
Boolean?
Let me explain what that means.
Is that like a boondock?
It could be. Yeah, absolutely. Let's say I have a while loop, and then in parentheses is my Boolean operator.
Ooh.
In other words, it's going to say, as long as this thing is true, continue to do whatever I find in there.
Okay.
So that's my code. Now, let's skip the Boolean operator for now. And let's put our hello world in here. So we're going to put console write. I'm just going to abbreviate this. Console write hello world.
I like your writing. It's very pretty.
I don't write. I type. It's kind of my thing. All right. So what I've just told this to do is, as long as this is true, continue to do this piece of code. Console write hello world. Console write hello world. Console write hello world. The problem is I have to tell it what kind of condition needs to be met.
Yeah.
In this case, I'm going to say X. And I know people get ticked off when I use X, but I'm going to use X.
But what? So
I'm going to say as long as X is greater than 0.
Oh. So you can use, I call them carrots or big alligators.
Yeah.
So you can use those?
Yeah, these are just Boolean operators. So I'm saying as long as the value of X is greater than 0, run this code. Now, a while loop is what we call a pre-test loop. In other words, it's going to look at the condition before the loop ever runs to make sure that it's true or false.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, because there are loops that will always, they guarantee you to run at least once before it checks. Because it's a pre-test loop, it means that it's possible, if the condition starts off as false, that this will never, ever run. So, for example, let's say I had integer x equals 0.
I can't see it.
Oh.
Integer x equals 0.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Let's say I have integer x is equal to 0.
Okay.
So if I start out my value as 0, when it gets to the while loop, X is 0, so is 0 greater than 0? It's not, which means this will never, ever run.
Okay.
Right? Okay.
So if you put in a different number, like 9?
Let's put 9. Okay, good idea. So X equals 9. Now it's going to get to the while loop. Is 9 greater than 0?
Yes.
Yes, it is. So it's going to
do this. So it's going to write hello world.
Right? It's going to go down to the bottom. It's going to go back up to the test. And what is the value of X now?
Is it still 9?
Still 9. So it's going to write it, and it's going to go to the bottom
and come
back
up. So it's going to keep on going.
It's going to keep on going. See, this is at a perpetual loop.
Ooh.
There is no way at this present time for this ever to not be true. X will always be greater than 0.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is below here, I'm going to say X is equal to X minus 1. So the first time it runs, X is equal to 9. It's going to print hello world. And then x is going to be equal to x minus 1. So that
so
becomes
9 minus 1 equals 8.
8. So now this is 8.
The next time it writes, it's going to say, is 8 greater than 0?
And that's still
true.
Write
it.
Right.
And then it's going to subtract another one.
And we'll all go all the way down to when it's 1. Is 1 greater than 0? Yes. 1 minus 1 is 0. And then the next time up, is 0 greater than 0? No. It stops.
So then it's finished.
I'm done. So I'm going to run this loop 9 times.
Oh, that's cool.
Right. This is a very useful function because anytime I need to reuse a piece of code, I'm going to be using a loop. A while loop is actually a really good way to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now,
I like it.
Yeah, I like this. So I'm thinking maybe now, before we get over to the Code Warrior, you want to say thanks to our sponsors?
I think we should. Who's our sponsor today?
Our sponsor's Lynda. And what I like about Lynda is that they're all about knowledge. I mean, that's what Lynda is. They want you to find an easy way to learn the things that you want to learn. We're about knowledge on know-how. I mean, it's in our name. And actually, we're in Coding 101 right now. But we're in Coding 101. We're all about teaching you the knowledge that you want to learn. And that's why we're happy to have Lynda as our partner. Now, Lynda is an online learning company that can help anyone learn creative software and business skills to achieve both personal and professional goals. With a Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to a vast library of current and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects, everything from creative and software skills to business negotiation and programming. At Lynda.com, you'll learn how to code, create, and build applications from the foundations of object-oriented programming in C and C++ to desktop and mobile apps for today's popular operating systems. You'll explore the fundamentals of programming, building web applications with .NET, PHP, and MySQL, managing data with SQL databases, connecting to cloud services, and much, much more. Now, Stubbs, I know that you've been brushing up on your code. I've been doing the same thing.
Yes, I have.
And, you know, you could technically jump around the web and find a bunch of websites on how to do this and how to do that.
Yeah, but then you're going to end up in the middle of some kind of crazy lesson by somebody who doesn't even know what they're talking
about. Exactly. And that's why we like Lynda. What I've been doing is I've been jumping into their programming section and just brushing up on the knowledge that I may have forgotten after years of misuse. What I like about Lynda is that they give you the option to jump to the chapter you need. It's one of the things that Lynda subscribers get with every subscription. They have chances to improve your skills, learn new software, and keep up with technology. They have over 2,000 courses with more added daily. Their popular course topics include Foundations of Programming, HTML, PHP with MySQL, Objective-C, Java, JavaScript, and WordPress. Instructors are working professionals at the top of their fields and expert teachers. Like you said, this isn't just the guy with the YouTube channel who says, hey, I'm going to teach you. No, these are people who have actually done this for a living.
And they're interesting, too.
They're interesting,
right?
They're
so much fun to watch.
How fun is it to watch when someone tries to teach you? Like, no, that's not great, right? You want someone who both knows how to do the skill and someone who can actually speak in front of a camera. They have high-quality video productions from state-of-the-art studios. These aren't the homemade videos that you'll find on YouTube. And they have curated course content. This is what I was just talking about. Each Lynda.com course is carefully structured so that the users can learn from start to finish, or they can jump to a specific chapter. So if you're learning C++ and you start looking at the lessons and you realize, this is a bit too basic for me, go ahead and jump forward and find the place where you should be. They have easy-to-follow videos that can help you find the answers you need and, my favorite part, searchable transcripts that let you search within a video to save you time and find exactly what you're looking for. Courses are for all experience levels, from beginner, intermediate, and advanced, covering a wide range of technical skills, creative techniques, business strategies, and more. You can watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device, and you can switch and pick up on the chapter where you left off. In other words, Shannon, learn at your pace, when you want, what you want, on your schedule.
I love it.
So here's what we want you to do. You and me, right? We're together in this. We want them to try out Lynda.com. It's only $25 a month for access to Lynda's entire course library. Or for $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructor's projects using the exact same assets. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial to access the entire library. That's over 2,000 courses free for 7 days. That's lynda.com/C101. And we thank Lynda for their support of Coding 101. Hey, you know, we got this guy Lou.
Lou!
Yeah, he's our code warrior.
You
think maybe
Lou.
We should have him back on the show?
He's the best thing ever.
All right. Hey, Brian, you want to bring in Lou?
Except for Starbucks.
Oh, my gosh. Is that Lou Maresca?
Yay, it's Lou.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good. Now,
hi.
Now I'd say that our Coding 101 folk had a lot of fun with your code last week on converting binary into decimal. We now want to convert integers into binary. Now, before we get that, Lou, do you mind if I teach people really quickly how that might actually work before you give them the code?
Sure, no problem.
Okay, so I got this from your code. This is how Lou does it. In fact, this is the way that we encourage people to do it. Now, when we were doing binary to integer, it was pretty simple, right? Do you remember that? We would just look at the value. If it's one, we add it up. If it's zero, we pass on by.
Yes.
It's a bit more complicated when we're converting an integer into binary because when we have something like, say, 41, how does 41 become a binary number? Exactly. But here's the easiest way to think of it. I'm converting from a base 10 system. That's what, integers, decimals. From a base 10 system to a base 2 system. Here's how you're going to do it, Shannon. Oh, what we want is you take your original quotient and divide it by 2. So how many times does 2 go into 41?
20.
Well, forget the point.
Oh, sorry, 20.
Just 20 times, right. It goes in 20 times. Is there a remainder?
Asking me to do math.
I know. I'm sorry. Is there a remainder?
Yes.
Yeah. And so the remainder would be 1. Now do the same thing. 20 2 into 20 goes how many times?
10.
And is there a remainder?
Yes.
No, exactly. Now 2 into 10 again. I get what?
No, it looks like 100.
Oh, sorry.
5.
Is there a remainder?
No.
Now 2 into 5, how many times?
That would be 2.
2 times. Is there a remainder?
Yes.
Yes. 2 goes into 1, how many times?
2 goes into 1?
Mm-hmm.
Zero times?
Just 1 time.
Well, 1?
Just 1. Right. Just 1 time. Is there a remainder?
2 goes into 2 1 time.
Right. And then at the end, we leave it off as this. Now this, if I read this from bottom to top, right to left, this actually gives me my binary.
Oh,
I go
my God, that's your
101001. That gives me the value of 41.
So you start at the bottom.
At the bottom.
Okay.
So bottom to top, right to left.
I see what you did there.
It's actually very simple. I mean, it seems difficult, but that's how you convert an integer into a binary number. Now, remember last week, you helped me to break this down into machine language.
Yes.
Because everything in programming is about taking a real-world problem and turning it into something a machine can actually understand.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to break this down, what do you say the process would be? So we start with a quotient of 41. We need to tell the computer to do what?
Get back to 41?
Well, no. So if we start with 41, we have to tell it to divide by 2, right?
Oh, yeah.
We divide it by 2, and then we say check, right? Is there a remainder? So if 2 goes into 41 20 times, I multiply this by 2 to get 40, and I say, is 41 and 40 the same thing? No. What's the difference?
Yeah,
1.
You always have the 1.
And I just keep doing that. I keep dividing by 2 and checking to see if there's a remainder. Divide by 2, is there a remainder? Divide by 2, is there a remainder? All the way down to the very last one. When 1 becomes the quotient, I just move that over to the end, and that gives me my binary number.
That's cool.
It's a pretty cool process, right?
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know.
Not bad at all. So, Lou, you hard coded this into a program.
That's right.
You want to show it to us?
So, what we're going to do is we'll show you how we basically take a number from a user, like that we've seen before in the last program, and then we're going to do a little loop. And, like you said, exactly what you did is convert that from an integer into a binary.
All right. You want to show us your code?
Sure. So just as Snubs did, quick, create a really fast console application here. And then we have this guy here. I'll zoom in so everyone can see. And so like the first thing we want to do is, like you said, ask the user to enter in their number. So we ask them, hey, please enter some kind of a number, a whole number. And then just like Snubs did, I'm going to ask them to enter to actually grab that number. So I'm going to store it in this fancy schmancy string variable that we have. It's just a bunch of text that they enter.
Right.
And since we're working with text, we have to do some kind of fancy conversion from text into a number. And so I'm just going to put this code in here. You don't have to worry about that. We can talk about that later. But basically, that's just going to convert the text into a number, and then it gives an error if you enter in something else.
Now, let me stop you really quickly, because some people are going to get thrown off by that. An integer is a number, right? So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
That's right.
A float is a decimal point, like 3.14. We're just dealing with numbers. Right. But when we deal with strings can be characters, too.
Can they include decimals?
They could, because it's just a string of characters.
Okay.
So any characters. So what Lou is saying is you need something in there to convert that string of characters into numbers. And, Lou, am I assuming that you're sanitizing your input?
That's right, sanitizing the input, making sure they can't enter something that can maybe crash the program.
Right, so if you ask them for a number and they type in the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy padre, it will say, hey, that ain't a number.
Okay.
What are you trying to do? Get out of here.
Another thing, too, is if they enter too long of a number, because it could be too long, can not fit in that size of a variable, it will also check that as well.
So would a code like this be why if I enter like a birth date of 2015, it would yell at me and be like, no, you must have been born before that because it's not 2015 yet. If I filled that out in a form online somewhere.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's all it means to sanitize. Just making sure that people can't enter in a value that they shouldn't be able to enter.
That's cool. Okay. Moving on.
All right. Cool.
All right, show it to us.
So now what we want to do is we want to give them the ability. We're actually going to do a conversion now. So we're going to show them how to convert. And so what we're going to do is we're create this little function. We can talk about functions later, but basically it has the heart of the code in here to actually convert it. And so what we're going to pay attention to is we get an input of a number. So this is a number we got converted to. Mm-hmm. And then this is that while loop that Padre was talking about. So in this case, we set a variable for how many times we want to loop. In this case, it's potentially 32 times because we have a 32-bit number.
Right.
And
a 32-bit number could be 4,324,000,000, something different possibilities.
That's right. Exactly. So basically, we're gonna loop while the bits is a greater than zero. So right now, we're starting with 32, and so we're greater than zero.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then the first thing we're going to do is I'm going to decrement that. So now we're down to 31 bits. And then just like you did on the board, I'm going to divide the number. And what this fancy smancy little character here is, it's called an operator. And just like if I were to put a division symbol here, I'm using what they call a mod or a modulo. And what that means is just it's going to give me the remainder. Rather than giving me what I devised my dividend, it's just going to give me the remainder. In this case, you're zero or you're one.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
Yeah, so in our example, so if you were to run that on the number 41, it would give you a remainder of one.
Right. So, and then what I'm going to do is I'm just going to use this. I'm going to do a check, and that's a special check. We don't have to worry about this. But just saying, hey, if it's a 1, then I'm just going to store 1 for later so that I can output it to the user. And then down below, finally, I'm going to do what you just did. I'm going to divide the number by 2 again and just going to store the rest of the number. So in your case, you did 41, and then you divided it by 2, and then you have what was left over. And then again, the loop ends, and it goes back up to the top, and it keeps doing it over and over again. And so basically, once this hits zero, or it's greater than zero, if it hits zero, it's going to stop. And then we hit the end of the program, and then it will return your number.
So can I see this actually running?
Yeah, sure. So let me just add in one extra line here, and that's just going to call this program. So we're going to go up the top, and right here I'm going to add it in here to say, hey, make sure to call my little function that I created. And so I'm going to hit run. And so it says, hey, enter a number so in this case you did 41, so I'll do 41 as well. Oops. Guess I can't do that way. 41. Oops. Okay, there's my error. I didn't enter a number at all.
You just got owned by your own program.
Number lock wasn't on. There you go. Okay, so 41, and there you go. So it's converted your number to binary. So the non-binary number is exactly
01001.
That's awesome. So everything is running in the background. You're not going to see a bunch of output with this code. It's just going to give you the answer, the binary number.
That's right.
Actually, I think, be with me here on this one, Lou. I think you just came up with a challenge that we could give to the chat room, and that is go ahead and print every line of the process. Find a way to put something into that while loop that will show you what's actually happening inside the calculations.
Oh, I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to let them figure it out.
We gave them everything they need in just this episode. Yeah. We told maybe a little crunch will write.
That's cool. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Lou.
No problem.
Now, Lou, let me ask you about this. When we deal with code like this, I find that a lot of programmers have their favorite loop, and they'll actually bend over backward to make sure they keep using their favorite loop.
Their favorite Lou.
Yes, I use my favorite Lou all the time. Is a while? What's your favorite loop?
It depends. I mean, like people like while loops, like you showed them, and there's also for loops, and that's very similar to a while loop, but you can initialize and update a variable every time you do the loop. I'm particular to for loops, but there's also do whiles, which are similar to do while, and then there's for eaches in C#, and that iterates over things. But I'm a particular for for loops.
Got it. I think next time when we have Lou on, I think we need to let him do a deep dive on all the other kinds of loops.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah. Because it's actually, you know, Lou, again, let me get your input on this. I find that because people favor, and all programmers tend to favor a piece of code, that they have their favorite piece of code, just like they have their favorite language, often they'll write less efficient code in order to use their favorite operator, yeah?
It's true. That's very true.
Yeah. So what about this? What if we have you back next week to give us the rundown on the different types of loops so that we could see, you know, like the while loop is a pretest, but there are also post-test loops. And we could also look at if and
else
statements because it's a good way to look at how you convert that in real world process of doing a problem into code. Can we do that, Lou?
Definitely.
Fantastic.
Hey. Thanks for having me this time.
Lou, if you could tell the folks at home, where can they find you? We know that you're Lou MM on Twitter. We know that you work for Microsoft. We know that you're a regular contributor to This Week in Enterprise Tech. But if our code monkeys want to go out and talk to you about something they're finding in their code, where do they find you?
Well, if you want to talk to me, you can talk to me on Twitter for sure. Send me a message on there. Or actually, you can send me, I'm going to put my email out there. I'm at LouMM@outlook.com.
Whoa, that's brave.
Yes.
Really? You want to do that?
Outlook.com.
I'm going to do it. I'm doing it.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so Code Monkeys, I'm not saying that we're going to be trolls or anything, but if we were trolls, we would all sign Lou up for every single internet offer we possibly could right
now. Right.
Don't do that.
Well, we wouldn't do that. No, we love Lou. Lou, thank you very much for being our code warrior. We're going to have you on next week. We're going to show off your code. And by the way, all of his code is going to be available in our GitHub repository right now. After the show. Lou, you are a monster.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Stubbs, what about it? Do you think maybe we've given them too much, like brains might start exploding?
Yeah, I think this is a good place to end.
That's a good place to end, yeah. So next week, we're going to be talking all about those other types of loops now that you've gotten your feet dirty. We're also going to be talking about if-then-else statements. We would really, like, how do we promote this? How do they tinker? What are they supposed to do?
Oh, all sorts of places. You can subscribe to our show. We're available over at twit.tv/code. That's where you can watch all the long version of the episodes, well, just like the live one that you just watched. And you can find all the subscription notes for audio and video as well.
All right. We're going to have the links to the compiler. We're going to have links to our GitHub repository. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes if you are an iTunes user.
That's right.
I think we were like number 3 in video podcasts
last
week.
Yeah, overall. Kind of, surprisingly.
Wow. Go figure. So please,
that's awesome.
Jump over there. If you are an iTunes user, if you have an iTunes device,
yes.
Jump in there, subscribe to the show. We'll make sure you get all the goodness each and every single week.
And we're on YouTube, right?
Yeah, we are on YouTube.
Twit.tv/coding101.
Yeah.
Twit coding101.
And how about this? I'm thinking that maybe once in a while we do a hangout, invite
the
code
monkeys. I would love to do that. Yeah, that would be so much fun.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you can't do that unless you're part of our YouTube group, so go ahead and jump in there.
Absolutely.
Also, you know, we learned from our know-how brethren that the best way to foster community is to give them a place to hang out. So we created a G+ community. Where is that, Shannon?
Yes. So I just created it. It's gplus.to/twitcoding101. And there's not even an image up yet. It's brand new, but you can find it at gplus.to/twitcoding101.
We have to code it.
Yes.
We have to code it.
Now,
if you're not into the G+ groove, you can also find us on Twitter. Actually, that's probably the best way to get a hold of us. I'm at PadreSJ.
I'm at Snubs.
Now, and as long as you're watching, you know what? Why not watch us live?
Yeah, absolutely.
We go every Thursday, usually at about 1:30.
1:30.
1:30-ish.
Today was about 1:45.
PM Pacific Standard Time. And as long as you're there, why not jump into the chat room at irc.twit.tv? We actually do read your comments, and believe it or not, we incorporate it into the show as we run. It's part of the fun. I want to say goodbye. I'm Father Robert Ballas here.
And I'm Shannon Morse.
End of line.